Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager. It's been a busy week, and there's more to talk about than I have time for, but I'm going to cram as much into this hour as I can tonight. First, a correction from last week. I said that Jim Fetzer had Alan Hart as a guest on his radio show, The Real Deal. It occurred to me afterward to check that out, and when I did, I found no Alan Hart as a guest on any program of Jim's, going all the way back to his beginning show in 2008. So my apologies to Jim Fetzer, who's a very nice and also a highly educated man whose interesting program specialized in 9/11 investigation, the JFK assassination, and other what can be called conspiracies. I received an email this week related to Alan Hart from an academic who had not heard my radio program of last week, and probably doesn't even know I have a radio program. This person takes Hart very seriously as an important voice doing important work, and I know that he's not alone in that view. But this is exactly what I was trying to point out last week, and these people would no doubt dismiss what I say as unsophisticated because we have to understand, quote, how the real world works, unquote, and it takes someone with an established reputation to break through the media gridlock and so on. But this kind of thinking is also the way we end up going along and eventually being taken in or even taken over by forces which are alien to our interests. I will say that that's how we got into the mess we're in today. So I choose to remain unsophisticated, if that's what I am. Now, nobody has called me that, but I'm imagining that they would. And follow my own truth, which comes from a higher source than the politics of compromise. I may have little effect on the course of events, but I will hold to the truth as my being shows it to me. As the saying goes, someone has to do it. Okay, more relating to last week's show, an update on the Elie Wiesel Romanian mass grave story. As I expected, more mainstream outlets are spreading this great news, and naturally Time magazine has a blog on it by someone named Rupert Wolf Murray. Here we get the actual facts behind this archaeological find, and it turns out to be just another fantastic and unbelievable holo hoax. Well, it appears that way to me, and here's why. Here's the story. It all started out when the now 86-year-old man named Vasile Enache, or Enache, or however you pronounce that, I assume he's Romanian, remembered, we're dealing always with memory, remembered a day in June 1941 when he heard people sobbing as he tended his cows in a forest. So investigating where the sound came from, he says he discovered hundreds of civilians being marched along by Romanian army soldiers. He says he was grabbed by a couple of Romanian soldiers who said, "You are a Jew, come with us." They arrived at a series of deep graves where the civilians were made to sit down, 10 at a time, and then shot. Others were ordered into the grave to arrange the bodies so more victims could be thrown in. The killings continued all day, but Enache managed to convince his captors that he was a local, an Orthodox Christian, and when this was confirmed by the local forester, he was released. My, my. This is the way all these stories go, isn't it? I mean, how many times have we heard this? They've got thousands of people. They're marching them into a forest. Then they sit them down. And they have these graves. They order people to go down in there. They shoot them. than other people who are sitting there and know that they're going to be shot too. They go into the grave and they arrange the body so that there's more room, and then they're shot, and then new ones go down there and they fix it all up. And then, I mean, this is, why would anyone, knowing that you're going to end up in that grave, just sit there and wait? Why wouldn't you get up and run away even if you were going to be shot in the back? I mean, wouldn't you rather? These stories are so hard to fathom. So it's up to you. You can believe it or not. Now, he's the only survivor, he says. He was released. They believed him, and he was released. And now he's finally telling his story. Well, would they release even if he was a Christian? Even if they believed he was a local, what did they care anyway? Out of all those thousands that he says were there, why would they release him to go back where he could, who has seen all that and could tell about it? Not possible. Not possible. But anyway, this is a story that they're taking seriously in Time magazine and through all the news outlets, AP, Reuters, etc. is all putting this out now. Okay, let me continue. Going on with this story, after persuading Inake to show him the exact location of the Volturi grave, now this is in now, local historian Adrian Cioflinca organized a team of people from Romania's Elie Wiesel National Institute for Studying the Holocaust to start excavating the site last month. Now remember this person, Cioflinca, I talked about him last week. Now he's a local historian. He's, you know, he has no other, what is a local historian? That's somebody who's in the community, who follows the history of that community. That's what he is. And people, a team of people from Romania's Elie Wiesel National Institute, not a team of archaeologists, not a team of historians, not a team of whatever, you know, people with credentials, just a team of people. And they started this last month. Now, they uncovered, I'm quoting here from Time Magazine's blog. They uncovered the remains of 16 bodies, including the skeletons of children, a lady's shoe, and Romanian army bullets from 1939. Now, this is reminiscent of the Holocaust by bullets invented by the French priest or whoever invented it for him, who was finding bullets in Ukraine, and that was evidence of people being shot there. But have since called a halt, I'm continuing now, but have since called a halt to the dig while they wait for rabbis to bless the site. Didn't I tell you? The rabbis are taking over now. Now the blog continues with this. The Volturi forester who saved Inake died in 1945. Well, of course, he's no longer around to confirm the story. But his daughter still lives nearby. Now, listen to what this this forester's daughter says. She describes what she remembers from 1941 when she was 6 years old. We used to go and play at the grave, she says. There was a thin layer of soil over the grave, and when we played, the bodies would move around. I think there are thousands of bodies buried there. Now, she's a great witness. Now, this is reminiscent of Babi Yar, where someone had said that the graves of all the thousands that supposedly were buried there, when actually nothing was ever buried there, no one was ever buried there, but this area spouted blood, geysers of blood for months afterward. And Elie Wiesel repeated that story in one of his books as a believable story. He never has said he doesn't believe it. Now article, the blog tells us, I'm quoting again, the site is currently sealed off by the Romanian police, who are guarding the bones and artifacts still on the site, and both journalists and the public are forbidden access. Naturally, again, this is a Jews-only place. As I said, they are probably burying more bones here and putting objects around that they can find. Who knows what they're doing in there? Nobody can go in there but them. The blog continues with lots of irrelevant propaganda about Romania's past, the Holocaust, the life of Elie Wiesel, but nothing of more real relevance to the supposed Jewish murder site. But it ends very, very interestingly with criticism of the Romanian authorities for their ambivalence towards this discovery and its premature interpretation. Well, I say it's premature. I should just say for their ambivalence towards this discovery and its interpretation. The last paragraph reads this. This ambivalence is reflected in the Romanian media coverage of the latest mass grave discovery. The country's main private TV channels are skeptical, basing their reports on a statement by the chief prosecutor in Iasi, Cornelia Pisacaru, who said, "At this moment, we don't know if these are civilian or military bodies, or they could be Russian or German soldiers. The front line was in that area during World War II. We can't confirm that they are Jews." We can't confirm that they are Jews. But now the writer of this blog says, "But such comments make no sense to the investigators who found so many civilian items in the grave." Of course, the investigators are the Elie Wiesel group, or to Vasil Enaki, who still remembers being dragged off to the killing ground on the assumption that he was a Jew. Now, we're supposed to believe this old man and his silly story rather than what these Romanian officials are saying, are skeptical about. This is really humorous. And before I read this Time article and had this phoniness confirmed for me, I had asked Dr. Andreas Westerle, who's, of course, been a guest on my program, who has such familiarity with this region and its history, to comment on the probability that the bones that were uncovered were Jews. He wrote to me this: "As for Romania, I have no direct knowledge of mass graves. If, in actuality, mass graves were found there, they most likely were A, old graves of Germans from the 1944 to 1953 Stalinist era, or B, graves dating from the overthrow of the Stalinist SSU regime, or earlier, most likely not Jews." Well, that was clear to him then, and I thought so too, and now it's pretty much been, now we find that the Romanian authorities are saying that also. Dr. Westerle continues with this: "Remember that after 1944, when Romania switched to the Soviets, at least 150,000 German civilians were sent to USSR as slave labor to work in primitive coal mines, in addition to more than 100,000 German POWs. I have met at least four survivors of those slave practices." And then he adds, "According to my Romanian sources, the Romanian strongman before September 1944, Marshal Antonescu," this is the one who had been cooperating with the Nazis, "was not interested in persecuting Jews generally, as he was married to a Jewess." So there we are. And again, perfect example of Jewish criminality and control of the media is taking place today in Framingham, Massachusetts. Many of you are familiar with Jim and Joe Rizzoli, who are very visibly fighting the battle against illegal immigration, mostly by Brazilians in this particular town, which is so far north of the border, but somehow the Brazilians have found it. And it's a popular, well, I suppose they're in many spots, not only that one, but they're definitely there. And more keep coming. Framingham is Jim and Joe's hometown. They are hometown boys, not newcomers, who have moved in to change things. The Brazilian invasion in Framingham is welcomed by Jews and Jewish groups that have taken over the town in recent years, according to the Rizzolis, and who have attacked Jim and Joe's anti-immigration efforts relentlessly. Of special interest to me is an article Joe sent out recently that was published in their Metro West Daily News about one of those ubiquitous holo survivors, this one a longtime Framingham resident who speaks at schools and wherever else they will let her in. This time it was to Hopedale Junior Senior High School students. There's a picture of her, so I can say she is quite an ugly woman who claims she is one of 1,200 Jews saved by Oskar Schindler during World War II. Now, you know the novel Schindler's List? I'm sure you're familiar with that, the one that Steven Spielberg made into a documentary-style movie. I repeat, the novel. It was a novel made into a documentary-style movie. So now the media indoctrinated public believes it's all a true story. Yes, there was an Oskar Schindler, and he did business with SS camp authorities, manufacturing metal bowls and utensils in his factory for the prisoners to eat their soup from. But that's about the end of the true likeness of the novel to reality. Most of you know that Schindler has been made into a Gentile hero by the Jewish Holocaust museums, which are also ubiquitous. Their idea is that the only good or virtuous Gentiles are those that serve and help the Jews, and so they like to really honor these type of Gentiles in order to encourage others to become the same kind of Gentiles. Therefore, this woman named Rena Ferber-Finder is quoted in the newspaper in an article about her that's titled Living History in Framingham as saying this: "It is because of Oskar Schindler that I am here. Because of Oskar Schindler, I had a chance to survive with my mother. I had a chance to grow up." Now, right here, she's not telling the truth, because Oskar Schindler didn't save anyone from extermination, since they were not intended to be exterminated by the Germans in the first place. All she says is that she was 10 years old, living in Krakow. This is in Poland. And at some point, her family was transferred to the Krakow ghetto. She and her mother were eventually transferred to Plaszow work camp, where they were able, this is the camp, of course, that is featured in Schindler's List, where they were able to get jobs at a Krakow factory that was run by Schindler. She says Schindler was very tall and handsome and wore a large diamond swastika in his lapel, but he didn't have the heart of a Nazi. Well, we don't know if she ever really even saw the man, but she says she did. In 1944, Schindler's factory was closed. She was 13 years old and was taken with her mother, she was never separated from her mother, to Auschwitz-Birkenau. They spent 3 weeks there before they were sent to Schindler's new factory in the Czech Republic. That's it, friends. That's all she's got, except for a lot of sentimental padding and vague talk about suffering and 1.1 million who died at Auschwitz. Now, if she was already telling this story before 1990, she would have been saying 4 million. But now she can only talk about 1 million dying there. But she somehow is saved from being one of them. So this woman, who's been living so well in Framingham, has been receiving money from the German taxpayers since she was 14 or 15 years old because of her difficult time. Now, she doesn't talk about receiving money from German taxpayers, I'm sure, but she has to be one of those who do. But she elicits great sympathy and admiration from the sorry school kids and also from the Rizzoli's hometown newspaper. We're going to talk to Joe Rizzoli about this criminal cabal right after the break. But in the few minutes before we do, I want to just mention something a listener brought to my attention, and that's the way the U.S. military is now sending officers on Auschwitz tours as part of a program to train them in something called mass atrocity prevention. This is the brainchild of Fred Schwartz, who is founder of something called the Auschwitz Institute. God only knows what that is, something he invented. And its director, Tibby Gallus, who felt strongly that military officers would benefit from participating in a genocide prevention course. So they secured a congressional grant to develop this course, which they plan to offer for 5 years. So we see what's going on here. You know, the Pentagon has so much money. The U.S. military has this huge bloated budget of taxpayer money, or whatever money, money created by debt, all the ways that they get their money, but it all comes back to being on our backs. And they're able to give out grants, or the Congress gives out grants for all of this, or they can ask for these things. And so people like Fred Schwartz can develop these programs and get grants, and then they get a lot of money, and this is how the money is wasted. This is part of the pork barrel side of things. And Tibby Gallus, Tibby sounds like Israeli. I've seen some names like that. I can't say because there's no pictures. Then Fred Schwartz could be one of those, could either be Jewish or one of those self-hating Germans. But in any case, they developed a curriculum with this grant money, which is about a week-long trip to Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp. I mean, that's what it amounts to. The trip to Auschwitz is the central part of this curriculum. And the article brings in a U.S. Army Colonel Charles Heller, who's a professor at the General Staff and Command College, not a real soldier, a professor, who approved the course, and he says, military officers are looking at the 21st century as a very different century for the military, one that will redefine the mythos of the warrior. Oh, yes, we've got a new kind of warrior, ladies and gentlemen. Heller, who is probably also Jewish, strongly believes that there is a need for the U.S. military to more actively engage in genocide prevention. Heller said in Rwanda in 1944, Canadian forces needed only 5,000 boots on the ground, and according to him, 1 million people would have been saved. So this is the kind of military that they're preparing for now. In Heller's eyes, not only does genocide prevention affect national security, but it helps the U.S. set a moral standard. Now, that's funny. What moral standard does the United States have, or can it claim? The United States has no moral standards, but I mean, the United States military especially has no moral standard. But this genocide business is what the Jewish interests are promoting. That's what they're all about. They want genocide, the whole idea of genocide, to be on everyone's mind, to be the big concern of the whole world, preventing genocide. And they, of course, are the experts in genocide, because they suffered the greatest genocide in the history of humanity. And so this puts them in control, and they can put all they want to put. All this money, all this taxpayer money, this is just a little tiny bit of it, for all of these programs to prevent genocides. And we know all that. So this article ends with Heller saying, every person in the world should go there, meaning to Auschwitz, and maybe we wouldn't have this stuff popping up every decade. Can you believe? One more thing before the break, and that is I'd like to bring to your attention the latest Barnes Review magazine. I've never talked about the Barnes Review on my program before, but I do write for the Barnes Review, and the November-December issue has just come out, which has my article with Wilhelm Mann on titled Operation Sea Lion. Now, this is part of our ongoing series of translation articles that are taken from Hermann Giesler's memoir about Hitler, which is entitled Ein anderer Hitler, or Another Hitler in English. And they're straight from the horse's mouth, as you say, because Giesler was a confidant of Adolf Hitler's, a good friend, and he spent a lot of time with him. And Hitler would, he liked to talk, and he would relax as they worked on these architectural projects. And he would express all these things without giving away any secrets, but he trusted Giesler very much. He was very trustworthy, and so he confided. He just talked a lot about what was going on, his thoughts, why he was doing things, and the problems he was encountering, and so on. So in this one, Operation Sea Lion, we have Hitler talking about why it was not launched, and it never was particularly feasible because of the considerations of if it succeeded, and there they were now in charge of the island of the United Kingdom. Then what would they do? Because the Soviet Union was threatening from the other side, and they couldn't really. Germany had no way to control all that territory, and so this is very interesting for this reason. And so I just wanted to recommend that. And also we will now go to the break, and when we come back, I will have Joe Rizzoli with me. Stay with us.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
While the U.S. is desperately trying to revive the stalled Middle East peace talks by enticing Israel to extend its construction moratorium in occupied Palestinian territories, Washington's put 20 stealth fighter jets worth $3 billion on the table and a pledge to fight any international resolutions against Israel. In exchange, it wants Israel to halt construction in the West Bank for 3 months, with a U.S. promise not to ask it to prolong it any further. Palestinians are criticizing the plan, saying the proposed freeze will not apply to East Jerusalem. The recent round of U.S. brokered peace talks became stuck 3 weeks ago after they began, and that was after Israel reaffirmed its commitment to continue building settlements in Palestinian areas. Let's now discuss this with Eve Harrow from the Yesha Council in Jerusalem, which actually represents the Jewish settlements. Hello to you. So the U.S.-backed talks have stalled now for weeks, and now it looks like Washington is trying to buy off Israel to get it to make a move. We're talking a bribery in effect here. Now, is this just a face-saving exercise for America's peace brokering reputation? How do you assess it?
Well, you said it, so it's an interesting fact. After Obama's midterm loss, where he sees that Americans are very upset with his domestic policy, and it doesn't look like it's going to get better anytime soon, then he's got to go offshore, as it were, and figure out how to make some kind of success of his regime, of his presidency, somewhere else. And so I think you said it better than I can, and that's where we are right now.
So Israel stands to get 20 stealth jets at great expense for only a three-month freeze on building settlements that are considered illegal under international law. Now, isn't there something morally suspect here?
Look, it's a very curious situation, although I must say that international law has not said that the Jewish communities of Judea and Samaria are illegal, and it is certainly
I'm terribly
not
sorry, but if I may interrupt you just for a moment here, I'm looking at a pair of resolutions here. We've got Resolution 484, in particular Resolution 446. This is a UN Security Council resolution that says the policy and practices of Israel in establishing settlements in the Palestinian and other Arab territories occupied since 1967 has no legal validity and constitutes a serious obstruction to achieving a comprehensive, just, and lasting peace in the Middle East. If that's a UN Security Council resolution, then what international law are you abiding by with your settlements?
Okay, there have been other international people who have also, lawyers, Eugene Rostow and other people who have said that the settlements are not illegal, including the American administration. And I think everybody knows how biased the UN is against Israel, and that's a whole other discussion. But I think what's happening here now is really very strange. What's going to happen in the next 90 days? Because especially for Israelis who see it very, very clearly, this isn't a peace process. All right, if it was really a peace process, the U.S. wouldn't have to buy anything and wouldn't have to lean on anybody, because Israelis want peace more than anybody else. But what we've seen over the years vis-a-vis the Palestinian incitement in the press and towards their children, naming streets after suicide bombers, showing maps that replace Israel with Palestine, that what's going on here is really a process of appeasement.
But if you're and saying this, that it's the Israelis who are really
right
wanting
now,
the peace to happen
so
in the
much.
Middle East, talk to me about this. If nothing else, is it right that a peace broker such as America, Washington D.C.,
let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and I have with me now a good friend and a great activist, Joe Rizzoli, who has a great website, too, ccfile.com. That's ccfile.com. It stands for Concerned Citizens and Friends of Illegal Immigration Law Enforcement. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Carolyn. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing very well. I have so many good things to talk about and write about these days, and I know that you do also, and you guys have had a lot of setbacks, and you just keep going. I have tremendous respect for both of you, but tell me, you know, give me your rundown on what's going on.
Well, in our town, the problem is in our town, it's been taken over by one cartel of predominantly Brazilians, and you know, this goes back maybe 15 years, and the people themselves are wising up to what's happening in the town now, and they know our group, which is called CCFIL, Concerned Citizens and Friends of Illegal Immigration Law Enforcement, and they know of us, and now, see, now you're getting the people in the town to speak up besides Jim and Joe Rizzoli. So
Very good, isn't it?
Yeah, so I mean, the people are mad. They're mad as hell. Because, you know, we have a $25 million school budget for children of illegal immigrants. $25 million. And they're cutting the school buses. They've already cut the musical instruments. And the town's all in a tizzy about cutting all these programs. And every time we either you write back, well, especially to the letters of the editor, but every time we get into the discussions, we say, listen, this is your fault, people. You've welcomed these people into the town, and you haven't done anything to stop them from coming here.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
So do you think you're making some progress then?
We have made headway. It's just, like I said, our town is a predominantly Jewish town. It's been taken over by a Jewish mindset. And these people love everybody. And they,
yeah.
And it's nothing you can do about it. I love everybody too, but you gotta look at it, how feasible, how much money is it costing you to love everybody? That's the question.
Well, you know? it's just this constant to work at education and getting people to get over that tremendous hump is exactly what you say, that they don't want to be against anyone. They don't want to be seen as not caring about
right.
these people who don't, and they always see them as people who don't have as much as we have, you
right.
know, and, you know, pretty soon they will have more than we have. Then they'll finally wake up, but, you know, you can't wait until then. But, you know, this idea that you need to help everyone who is less well off than you is just crazy.
But see, the problem is that's part of the Jewish mindset. See, their religion is based on helping people, so it makes them feel good.
Are you kidding?
Well, that's how they think. That's how some of them think, though. They figure if I help people, you know, I'm in God's eyes, I'm doing something good. But it's not.
I don't think that's the Jewish religion. I think That's the kind of scam that they put across.
Well, I agree.
Everyone to our detriment, you know.
But I totally agree with you, and that's why I think it's so
They've
wrong.
They've really never been helping anyone except themselves.
I totally agree. For sure.
Well, this is what we, you know, we need to point out to people.
Because the ADL, you know, they were responsible for kicking our cable show off the air just in the month of May. And mm-hmm. for them to say they didn't have anything to do with it, I don't buy that. Because their ADL in this town, when they canceled our cable show, they had meetings and they put on Jewish things on TV to combat what we said. They wouldn't play our show until late at night, yet their show was played 8 o'clock in the morning and 9 o'clock, you know, so the Jewish people and everybody could see it. But our show is played at, you know, 10 or 11 or 12, you know. And for
yeah,
them to
I,
say
I
they,
know they did that, yes. Okay, so you've had your cable show. You've been kicked off of the cable
access
that you have there. So they kicked you off of there. And then they have kicked you out of meetings. And just recently, Jim was removed from a meeting. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. What was the name of that group? The group is called MICA. What's MICA stand for, Jim? Metropolitan Interfaith. MICA, it's called MICA. I sent you the website.
Yes, I looked at it. It's one of these goody-goody things.
Yes.
And they have a picture of a very white, blonde-looking woman holding a sign, smiling, looking so virtuous, and she's representing this, and yet, you know, because of the name, Micah, that's one of the books of the Old Testament.
That's right. It's a biblical character, and it's a book in the Bible, right? But see, it's a metropolitan interfaith movement that has a lot of Jewish temples involved in it and sure. liberal churches in the town. So we've been fighting Micah for the last couple of years because they've kicked us out of every meeting almost.
Well, how do they do that? Because they're supposed to be so good interfaith and all. What grounds do they use? I do understand. I want you to tell our listeners.
Well, because we are against illegal immigration, and they're supporters of illegal immigrants.
And so you go and if you speak what you believe, and I know
we don't speak.
Well, I know that you're not being offensive, or you're not raising hell, or you're not, you know, disturbing anything. And so you just go there. You have your own. I think you were filming, weren't you, or something?
Right. Well, we just want to get into a meeting. They won't let us in. They won't let us in any meeting, even though the meeting says it's a public gathering. Like the one Jimmy was just kicked out of. Meeting said in the newspaper it was a public gathering. And they were having, Jimmy's running, he was running for state rep. So as a state rep, a running mate, he went there so he could listen to question one and the question three and all these questions about what's happening. And he wanted to just sit and listen to what the people had to say. And he went there and waited to get let in, and they wouldn't let him in. So he just walked in, and they called the police. Three police cruisers came down to get him out of the place.
Unfortunately, the police are more and more working for these people.
We're having a bone of contention right now with the police because he dialed 911. Michael Jacoby Brown, the Jewish guy that runs this place, or is part of it, he runs
the Micah group. He's kind of the
Micah
head of it.
Right. Micah Jacoby Brown.
Yeah.
Right, Michael Jacoby Brown, when Jimmy was out front trying to get in or just standing there minding his own business, waiting to politely get let in, he was dressed very nicely. He had a clip of, you know, a thing to write on and everything. Michael Jacoby Brown looked like a chicken with his head cut off. This guy was running. He was back and forth out in the ground. I was videotaping him. He was a back and forth. I mean, I could hear him on the cell phone. I'd like to talk to the chief and this and that. Wow. And he called 911. And we have a bone of contention with the police department to file charges of misusing 911 because my brother wasn't doing anything.
Well, and denying him his civil rights.
Absolutely.
And whatever other kind of rights you can come up with. So are they listening to you, the police?
Well we're requesting the 911 call now. It's been taking 2 weeks. We haven't got it yet.
Well, you know, the impression I get, Joe, is that a couple of things. One thing, when I see what's going on there in Massachusetts and in your little town of Framingham, it's so unbelievable how the Jewish control in a small community like that. And then we know it's all over Massachusetts. I've been dealing with Boston University because of my Elie Wiesel work. And it's amazing. You know that it's over heavy with Jews, but it's amazing when you find out just how much it is.
Incredible.
And so I'm aware of Massachusetts now. I know you used to say this, and I would think, how can there be that many? But or how can they be so in control? But of course they're even in control in Texas, so it's pretty. But I was thinking, well, then, you know, we need to just kind of get some part of the country and work from that part of the country and try to clear that out or keep that clean, because it's hopeless where you are. But then on the other hand, I see the work that you're doing as drawing attention and showing the example of just what it's like when they get that kind of control.
It's terrible.
I mean, it is terrible. And it's like when it's like a wonderful example for everyone to see. Well, we don't want that in our community because our community is not that bad yet. And this is where the problem is in this whole immigration and racial thing, is that people, if they're not suffering, well, we've been saying this forever, but if they're not suffering enough themselves, if it's not that bad where they are, they're just not going to do anything. But I think that what you two show, and I do wish it could get out more, than it does, shows just how badly you can be treated. I mean, you're just treated like like you're scum or something by these people. You do have supporters.
Right, right. But it's like we almost feel like we don't have any civil rights. I mean, it's
right.
like we have...
Well, you don't.
And no, we
I mean,
don't.
You don't. If they whenever it's anything to do with them, you don't.
Oh, yeah. Well, we can't get any lawyers to back us up. We've asked the ACLU to back us up. We've asked the ADF, Jimmy, American Defense League, anybody. Nobody has backed us up. Stood
behind us.
What
does the ACLU say? Do they just answer?
They just said no. We don't want to take the case.
They don't give a reason. They don't say we don't think
nope.
No.
Well, I know why. I mean, I know why, because all the people here are Jewish.
Yeah.
And they don't want to get involved with the whole Jewish, because the ACL knows the ADL has been here, and the ADL has been working their dastardly deeds to get us off the cable air, and they don't want to get involved because they'll be fighting their own people.
Another thing is that the Jews are so good at making so much noise, at causing so much grief to the people, you know, that they're complaining to, or the people in charge. They just don't give up, you know, and they just keep, they whine, they cry, they complain, they use every trick that they can think of, they use every bit of influence, they use everything to get their way. And so people don't want to deal with them, so they just give in, or they won't go up against them. And I mean, you know, even in official capacities where they might probably don't approve of what they're doing, they would just rather try to stay out of it and hope. Well, yeah, they just stay out of it. I mean, they don't hope for the best because the best never comes, but they get their way by that. And because they're so, I know what I want to say. They're so despicable. They make themselves so unpleasant. You know, you just don't want to deal with it. And they don't
Carol,
care.
That's exactly what I was going to use.
They don't care that they make themselves so unpleasant. They
right.
really don't. They make themselves just hated, and yet somehow, as long as they get the end result that they want, they're in a position of power over you, and they get away with it. Nobody else can do that but them. Nobody else is as good at that as they are. And that's one thing that we really need to understand. I don't know how you actually fight with that, but they are really the most unpleasant.
Well, they're despicable. Well, I can't, you know, these people are despicable people. They're dishonest. They're liars.
That's right.
I mean, I can't say enough bad about what they've done to us. I mean, I believe in freedom of speech. They can say anything they want about the Holocaust. I could care less, but I want my ability to speak too. And they take that away. That's the problem.
Yes. Well,
that's the problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so what is your, considering all the difficulty that you face, and I know you're fighters, but what is your overall strategy? You have one?
Well, we're off the air and cable until May. Next May.
You have your hearing or something to.
Well, I don't know. They'll put us back on. We still haven't decided what we're gonna do. We'd like to get back to them and talk to them because they really pulled some unscrupulous things against us. They lied. You know, they said we did some things. They said we violated copyright and they don't own the copyright. They had no business of even bringing copyright up, because the only way you could bring copyright up as if you own the copyright, and the copyright stuff that they were talking about had to do with Buena Vista Video, and they don't own Buena Vista Video. And so their accusation, which was one of the major ones, out of the five major accusations, three of them we could throw right out the window because they were just either lies or just totally inaccurate and frivolous. And yet, you know, when the ADL quotes in the paper recently, you know, they'll quote, oh, they had 26 violations. And it's like, no, not really. You know, we didn't have 26 violations. They just took, they could take 50 of our shows and say we had 50 violations for the same thing. For one,
yes.
You know, if we had the same introduction, they could say it was 50 violations when it's only one show had the same introduction, you know, that was 5 seconds off or had something, you know, well, which is legal, but they, these people, I'm telling you, they're just unscrupulous. I mean,
that's it. I mean, There's no more, you know, you can say it again and again and again, but what you just say, they are just totally unscrupulous.
Yeah,
and that's
They got
totally
nine people.
Criminal mentality.
Right, they got nine people on the board of directors. Six of them are Jews.
Yeah.
So what do I expect? Do I expect to get a righteous judgment from people who are backed by the ADL and who the ADL has been, you know, coming in and talking to them? One of the lawyers, there's a couple of lawyers, Jewish lawyers, that are on the board of directors. I mean, come on.
So while they might not like some things, they don't want to represent everything that you're saying. And does that make you ever think that, well, you should tone down and moderate and just get, you know, just talk more gently about it? Do you think, do you ever have thoughts that would work better for you?
It wouldn't matter, because one of the guys that used to run in the group with me, he was a calm, cool, collective. We started out that way. He would actually speak. He had a tie on, and boy, he was accused of being a racist, a hater, and mm-hmm.
And
blah,
he
blah,
didn't
blah,
talk
blah.
As strongly as you do.
No. He calm as a cucumber. Calm as a cucumber. Well, it was the subject matter.
Yes, I agree with you. I don't agree.
It wouldn't matter.
I was just saying, because my own opinion is that we need to be as strong and as outspoken and as forceful as possible. But be careful to always find things that are clear that you can be clearly truthful about, and then I think it really hits with people, whether they will are ready to admit it or not. But I think this going about it with the soft approach, or the, you know, with the things that some people recommend, or being more careful, or trying to find more consensus or agreement. I just don't believe that
it wouldn't matter.
No, it doesn't. And then they really crush you, and then people are even more timid. So you have to come out very, very strongly against this. I think you're doing right.
Well, I mean, you know, let's face it. We feel what's happened to our town. I mean, like I said, the every single thing that we've said has come true. Every single thing.
Yes, yeah.
The newspapers have got the information we said. The Boston Globe has come out with articles that we said happened years ago. And they confirm exactly what we said about human trafficking, how much it costs with illegal immigrants coming here. They all laughed at first. Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, well, can you put all that together and somehow get it put out there? Okay.
Well, we did. It's on our website. We've gone, you know, we've said stuff, we've gone to meetings, I put a package of information together with DVDs, and I gave them to our selectmen, I gave articles out of the newspaper. I mean, I got a stack of things that I laminate, probably about 2 feet high of articles just out of the newspaper of immigrants and what's happened to our town, and they don't listen. They just don't listen because the town, the selectmen, that's the ones that run the town, but remember, the town's run by Jews, and they just don't want any part of it, because most of them are renting out their houses to illegal immigrants, and the downtown.
Who are these selectmen and these?
Well,
you mean?
Some of them. I mean, the older ones. I don't know right now.
Why do these? Why are these? Are Jews in the government too? So
there's a Jew. I think there's a Jew on the board of selectmen, right, Jimmy Sisiski? Yeah, there's a Jewish guy on the board of selectmen.
But just one. But the reason that the rest of these politicians go along with him is what? What is the reason? Is it because
some of them own businesses they own businesses that the Brazilians go to, or they own the rental, they rent to them, and they own the stores.
Same thing as with our Congress and so on. I mean, it's, you know, financially they come out all right, so they don't.
Right.
Care. They're not.
Yeah. See, these people are living in their houses, and if they get rid of them, they're going to lose their rent. You know, so it's economics. You know, for them, but they don't look at it from rule of law. They don't look at it from the way we're looking at it, and so, you know, nothing really gets fixed. And yet,
what are these people like? Say you are very pay close attention to the politics in your town and to who gets elected to what. So why do these kind of people get elected? why can't people, these same old questions, but, you know, why can't these things be pointed out, and why don't the voters make better decisions?
Because this is the problem. The ones that make the biggest noise are the Jews. So they're the ones that are in the politics in the town. You know?
Yeah.
And so they run the town. So, you know, school committee, running for selectmen or any program in the town, you have Jews running. Board of Health. And so
that's,
they're the people.
That's because it goes back to what we were saying, and I maybe saying it better would be they are so aggressive.
Right.
And they are willing to spend their time doing these things. And our people are not that aggressive. They're not willing to become, you know, devoted to causes and so on. And the Jews have always been willing, or at least a large part of them, to be devoted to the cause of Jews, you know.
Right, exactly.
I mean, this is their major cause, and they all come out, not all, but they will come out and work hard for that and donate to it and get involved. And so they're out there doing all this, and our people are just sitting back and watching it and saying, oh.
Well, yeah, they've let the Christians and the other people in the town have let these people take over.
Well, they have. They have the philosophy of meekness.
Right, exactly. Right, and they let these people take over, and these people, this is what we have now running everything. I mean, we got, you know, the lawyers. I mean, most of the people, you know, that get involved in politics are lawyers, Jewish lawyers. But see, one of the major problems, too, is anytime you come out against the Jews, they will economically destroy your business.
Yeah, yeah.
You will lose your job. I mean, they are despicable.
They have this aggressiveness combined with this unscrupulousness. So they're just criminals. I really think the emphasis needs to be on criminal activity.
Yeah, well,
when your effort is to take over an entire community and put yourself everywhere, which it can be shown. What's this like in Hollywood or, you know, all of that can be shown. People still don't seem to mind, though, as long as they like the movies or something. But you can show that this kind of takeover has a criminal overtone to it.
Oh, I think it is. I mean, to me, it's criminal. You know, and we're just going to keep exposing it. When somebody asks me who kicked you off your cable, I say the Jews. That's what I say. The Jews. I don't, not really. No, it was the Jews.
Yeah.
I'm not playing around. They kicked us off a cable. The Jews kicked us off of cable.
Yes, you know? Because the ADL used their power.
Absolutely.
And all the Jews in town. But you can also name names of them, can't you?
Well, I do. I mean, I say who did it, because now I accuse them of lying when I bring up about the copyright, because now I don't want to slander somebody, but what they accused me of was a lie. So if I say they lied, I have to bring up a specific instance, and that's when I bring up they accuse me of copyright infringement. And that's a lie, because they don't own the copyright. And that's how you got to be careful what you say, you know.
Yes, yes, but of course they lie and get away with it.
Oh, absolutely.
They lie like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
We need to encourage our children to go into law and get a bunch of lawyers.
You're right.
That's something we're really lacking in. We don't have all the lawyers are afraid to go up against the Jewish control of the legal system even. And they've got so many lawyers. They've got lawyers for everything.
They're all bought.
yeah, right.
The judges are bought too.
Well, you two are, you're very brave. I think you're among the bravest people, because a lot of people talk on the internet, but they're not out there doing things the way you are. And I hope you will continue and keep watching everything you do, and we'll talk again. Is there anything else you want to say before?
Well, I just want to say on behalf of you, Carol. I listen to what you have to say on the MP3s, and I listen, and I'm very encouraged that you have the fortitude and the strength, because it's very hard to hear a woman, you know, like of your caliber to keep fighting too, and that encourages me. Good. I'll tell you that. That encourages me because this, most of the women aren't like you, and you just put it right out there, and I'm so happy.
Well, I'm happy that I have the opportunity to do it now, and I will say that most of the men are not like you either, Joe. Unfortunately,
well,
I mean, but there are more men. There's a lot of men, but they're not they're still not willing to put their name out there,
right,
and be known. So. But, and then Jim running for office, these kinds of things, you know, really are needed, and you do it all. So I thank you, both of you, and, keep up the good fight.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
That's my show for tonight, friends. Thank you for listening. I'm Carolyn Yeager. Come back again next week.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.